This is a podcast from The Times.
The Bugle, audio newspaper for a visual world.
Hello, Buglers, and welcome to an historic Bugle issue 102. Historic, not because it's the 102nd Bugle to feature me, Andy Zoltzman, reporting to you this week from London, nor even because it is the first Bugle to be devoted entirely to the works of influential Brazilian architect Oscar Niemeyer, who is now aged 102, also owns 102 copies of Noddy Goes to Toyland, and eats 102 locusts every day for breakfast. No, it's not that, it's historic, because this is the first ever Bugle to feature someone on an archipelago. Can you guess which one of us it is? I'll give you a clue. I'm in London. But John Oliver, the globe-trotting diva that he is on an archipelago. Hawaii? I'll tell you Hawaii. And Hawaii, too. Yeah. He's on Hawaii because he was told to go there, and he did. That's the kind of straight-up guy he is. Hello, John in the Pacific.
Hello, Andy. Hello, Buglers. I am indeed on, I believe, the most remote selection of islands on Earth. I speak to you, Andy, from the other side of the world, unless you happen to live in Hawaii, that is. In which case, I speak to you from your side of the world, otherwise known as the wrong side of the world. First things first, another football update.
Oh, right, OK, right.
Hard-fought 2-2 draw this week from our team. Few team changes after that tough loss last time. Difficult early team news when our goalkeeper was unable to play at the last minute due to remembering he'd promised to go and see a friend's jazz band that night. That was a bit of a critical blow. The game made slightly difficult by the fact that people were playing baseball at the other end of the field, meaning that a small white ball would occasionally come flying through the field of play. But it did give the game an extra bit of spice. But the point is, another dream goal from John Oliver. This time cutting in off the left, beating two players and hitting a right foot. That's right, you heard me, Andy. Right foot shot into the top far corner.
Is this on YouTube, John?
Listen. It's a fact. You don't need to film a fact.
Well, I want it filmed.
So, yeah, I'm in Hawaii. I've been here for a day, Andy. This was exactly how I envisioned paradise. Right. Walking around, annoying people. It's like going to heaven with the sole intention of pissing off the angels. Except, instead of angels, it's the Republican Party's fundraisers and strategists, otherwise known as the opposite of angels. As I'm talking to you now, I can see the Pacific Ocean. Out of my hotel window, I've got a Mai Tai cocktail in my hand, a Hawaiian shirt open to the waist, Bermuda shorts, flip-flops, one of those flower necklaces everyone seems to be wearing. Let's do this thing. I've literally, 5 minutes ago, just had a phone call from the front desk with a woman with a very strong Hawaiian accent saying, there's a package for you down here from Jeff. And I said, I don't know. I don't know anyone called Jeff. And she said, It's some salt. I don't know why anyone's bringing me salt. And she said, it says from Jeff, a fellow bugler. The note is downstairs. I'll get it for next week.
Oh, right.
It's been all basically Jeff, a bugler, has given some salt for me to give to you, Andy, to get through the snowy snap.
Oh, I see, right.
You're going to have some Hawaiian salt.
Oh, well, that's the best kind. Does Hawaiian salt work on ice? Because pretty much it doesn't really know what ice is.
That's a good point. Yeah. I guess, well, listen, you've got to give it a go.
Tom has just suggested that we need to put it through a lab to make sure it's not anthrax.
Well, listen, I'm taking it back anyway. I'll take my chances.
Well, you're surrounded by Republicans, John. It's not impossible.
That's truer than I would like to admit.
So what are you made of Hawaii so far? Have you got a hula skirt?
Yeah, but I had one of those before coming to Hawaii, so that's a moot point.
It's going to be a National Youth Theatre, though.
Yeah.
So, John, where exactly in Hawaii are you right now?
Honolulu.
Oh, I'm terribly sorry. I didn't realise we caught you at a bad time. We can give it 10 minutes if you want. Just finish up your crossword and then we can get going. Still, good acoustic, probably. Anyway, that's another Bugle first.
It was worth me travelling all this way, Andy, just so that you could do that joke.
Yeah. Good.
I can't wait to do the Bugle from Jamaica.
As always, some section of the Bugle going straight in the bin. This week, to mark Tony Blair's historic appearance at the Iraq War Inquiry in London, we have a special supplement looking at other figures from world history who ought to be asked, what the f*** did you do that for? Including T.S. Eliot. What the f*** up with the wasteland? Cripes, you ruined my English A-level and killed my respect for any poems longer than 5 lines in length with that. Columbus, why the f*** did you bother taking up sailing? You knew nothing good could come of it. Germany, why the f*** did you win the 1954 Football World Cup? You must have known Hungary were by far the superior side, and a Hungarian victory would have done the world of football a real favour. Admittedly, there are a few other questions I could ask about your historic behaviour as a nation, but still, that's the one I want answered first. And Pat Robertson, why, after your first few efforts produced nothing but hateful bilge, did you carry on talking? Even as a little boy, couldn't you have looked at the broader picture and pretended to be mute? And finally, the Queen, why didn't you shack up with Elvis Presley when you had the chance? Also in the bin, the latest in our What to Do With Your Head series, this week, nodding after eating something really tasty.
Top story this week, the economy. Now, the economy, as we all know, has been in seriously bad shape for a while. In fact, for the last 30 years, the economy has been like Elvis. What began as a vibrant, young economy with incredible promise and poise was eventually ravaged by years of misuse until it became a bloated, dangerously obese caricature of itself with obvious self-esteem issues. And we're now collectively faced with the same choice that Elvis's entourage faced towards the end. Do we intervene and help the economy become a leaner, healthier, and more functional individual, or do we let its fat ass die on the toilet? It's a tough one. Banks in America and Wall Street certainly seem to favour the second one of those at the moment, fighting regulation at any turn. I think their argument is that the kindest thing to do at this point is to let this abomination of nature take its course.
Well, it's party time here in Britain, John, because the good times are back. Britain is back on its feet. The recession has been seen off, John. We are back in growth, albeit imperceptibly by 0.1%. So we've seen off the recession, John, just like we saw off the Nazis and Napoleon and Catholicism and the Vikings, dragons, the Ice Age, our geographical link to continental Europe and the dinosaurs. We've seen them all off now, John, and because the latest figures have shown Britain surging out of recession, or surging by, if you can surge by 0.1%, I guess surging like a hibernating sloth surges out of its sleeping bag on a spring morning after hibernation. It's the 0.1% growth, John. That is about the same amount as you would grow if you took a small bite out of a sandwich. So, it's over.
You really couldn't have drawn a finer line between being in recession and not being in recession there.
Yeah.
Can you feel that 0.1%?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's all psychic.
Can you sense that people are 0.1% further away from losing their homes to the bank?
Yeah. You know, it's all psychological, John. As long as it hasn't got a minus sign before it. You know, we're dancing. There's been literally parties in the street. People dancing, waving around little inflatable Bank of England's. It's like VE Day all over again, but more so.
Apparently the announcement was welcomed by the British government, Andy, but is it not essentially like a doctor saying to you, you are 0.1% better than you were yesterday. You're now 0.1% more not dying. Congratulations, but, and it's a big but, try not to get carried away. In the grand scheme of things, you are still currently
It is exactly that, John. We might be out of recession, but we're out of recession the same way that a seal is out of a swimming pool, probably briefly and largely just to impress the public. So will this imperceptible micro-boom sway the voters in advance of the general election in May? No, it won't, John. Nothing will. Gordon Brown could stand up in Parliament, tap himself on the side of a head and produce an egg from his ear and then fry it on his own face, and people would still say, yeah, well, I'm paying for that egg. So I don't think it's going to make any difference. And we have to ask, John, why has Britain, of all the developed economies, been so slow to emerge from the financial fog compared with other similarly smart-dressed countries? And I don't know, John, but I think it's probably something to do with the fact that our manufacturing sector has been squeezed like a 1970s Irish lemon in a police interrogation. And the fact that our entire economic well-being now depends on people guessing what will happen to the rest of the world economy. In fact, if it wasn't for all the immigrants doing our handiwork for us, we'd be totally shafted.
Significantly less encouraging signs coming out of the UK as well. Apparently the gap between the rich and the poor in England is reportedly wider than it was 40 years ago. And bear in mind that 40 years ago, lots of poor people in England still had outdoor toilets. The poverty gap then was between the indoor and the outdoor dump. And that's a pretty big, pretty visceral gap. I've always said that the most luxurious dump humanity has yet created is the Richard Branson toilet from his MTV Cribs episode. I don't know if you've seen it, but Branson essentially has a fully plumbed toilet outside on the edge of a cliff on his tropical island overlooking the ocean. That is phenomenal. That is what millionaires should be doing with their money. They should either be like Trump and have all gold bar fixtures. They should be like Caligula and appoint their pet horses to the Senate. Or be like Branson and create the luxury outdoor dump. I know this is scatological, and it's not particularly pleasant to talk about, but it doesn't make it any less a pinnacle of human achievement.
I guess there's all something to aspire to, that if we all, you know, work with the same dedication and zeal as Richard Branson, then one day we too could take a shit on top of a cliff. That's how, see, that's the poverty gap working, John. That is giving some people something to aspire to. So, you know, that dump gap has changed from indoor to outdoor to indoor to cliff top. Some people even claim that this 0.1% rise was another Labour lie by the government. But let's give the government some credit, John. You know, you cannot accuse them of always lying and then suggest that they've lied by saying that the economy is 0.1% out of recession. That is a piss-poor lie, John.
You terrible
cannot
lie.
Have it both ways. That is like claiming that Saddam could have deployed weapons of mass destruction within 45 decades. No one is going to be impressed with that kind of lie. State of the Union news now, and, well, the State of the Union has happened in America. You missed it, John, didn't you, because you were on a flight to Hawaii.
That's right, I was on the long flight to Honolulu, and so I've not watched all of it, and the only time I've been here was...
Hang on, can I just interrupt you there, John? After your long flight, did you actually get to meet Lulu and pay homage to her?
Well, you had that one lined up as well.
If I do another one, do I get to keep it? Do I get to keep it?
I've been at the RNC all day here today, Andy, but as far as I can tell from the RNC delegates, it was the worst State of the Union speech in history and is likely to be followed up with a resignation letter. Is that correct?
Well, John, I can fill you in on some of the gaps. I can tell you from a neutral British perspective that, according to Obama, the State of the Union this year is basically, yeah, OK. I'll fill you in on some of the detail that you might have missed, John. I can just fill you in, since you wouldn't have heard these details necessarily. There's going to be a massive tax hike for overseas workers on green cards in non-essential industries. That's going up to 86%, I think.
Wow, that's lucky that my industry is completely essential. Otherwise, I'd be worried.
£500 billion to put a man on Mars, specifically one man, Pat Robertson, on Mars. Let's have a whip round. Obama pledged to personally strangle any banker who trousers a bonus that prompts spontaneous swearing or vomiting in more than 75% of average people. To be honest, I missed it as well, John, as you can probably tell from that. I did have it on the radio, but at the same time I was looking up a really interesting cricket statistic for my cricket blog.
It did seem that the subtext of the speech was essentially, this job has been a total nightmare, and I don't think I'm the only one to blame for that. Recently, he's been trying to toughen up his language with the banks, especially after the recent Massachusetts loss, saying last week, if the banks want a fight, I'm ready to give them one. And the banks then responded, you don't know who you're messing with, punk. We've knocked tougher guys than you out of power, so ask yourself, is this really a fight you want to get involved in? Didn't think so. Now lend me $3 billion and we'll say nothing more about it, you slag.
That's John's latest pitch for his next movie role. London Gangster.
That's right. Yeah. You can file it under my filing cabinet of impressions.
But he really slammed the political process, as you say. He sounded thoroughly disillusioned, as if he'd come into the White House relatively new to the political game, as he was, and thought to himself, well, it can't be nearly as bad as they make it look on the telly, only to find out, f*** me, it's worse. And some things are better on TV than they really are. Some things are worse in TV series than reality. For example, going on holiday in northern France looked like no fun at all in Band of Brothers, whereas actually it's perfectly fine most of the time. But clearly being president is worse than it generally looks on telly.
There was one bizarre moment I saw in a clip on the news just a minute ago when, after Obama said, I do not accept second place for the United States of America, the camera cut away to the Democrats pumping their fingers and chanting, we're number one, we're number one. What? How old are you? You know that's basically barely true. Waggle your fingers around while you can.
There was also a slightly odd moment when Obama claimed that his bank bailout was about as popular as root canal surgery. At which point, he was slightly grinning, and behind him, Joe Biden was pretty much pissing himself. And it just kind of looked bad when they were talking about the economic devastation that has enveloped large swathes of America. Well, I guess a gag's a gag, you know.
Yeah, gag stands. In positive financial news, especially for one man, James Cameron's movie Avatar has now made $2 billion, making it the highest-grossing movie of all time, even eclipsing his previous movie about that big ship which worked perfectly well for a while and then suddenly didn't work quite as well. Now, you might well ask, how is it that a three-hour movie about some 3D blue people who ride on dragons has managed to gross over $2 billion in the midst of a global financial implosion? And I would simply say, I have no idea. Apparently, James Cameron has managed to tap into a deep desire for films about blue people that none of us knew we had.
I think it shows how little the world now likes itself, that it would rather watch a movie about blue people than about real people.
What can we learn from Avatar to help us turn this economy around? It's hard for me to say, because I've actually not yet seen it.
Right, I haven't seen it either, but I don't think it's all it's cracked up to be. It's just,
that's based on absolutely nothing.
Well, it just hasn't really impressed me at all. I mean, it was on at my local cinema. You know, it made absolutely no impression on me the other night. And, well, I wasn't in the cinema. In fact, I wasn't even at home. I was down at my parents'. But you'd expect a really, really good film, properly good, not just flashy, to break through that barrier. Although Sigourney Weaver was fantastic, though. Terrific performance. Oh, hang on, I'm thinking of Ghostbusters. It does suggest that the entire global economy is now dependent on special effects-laden sci-fi escapist blockbusters. And I'm not sure that's sustainable, John.
Chavez doing what he does best news now, taking the crazy hard to the hoop. Now, we all know what Hugo is capable of with his mouth. He can spew bullshit faster and harder than a 500-foot bionic mechanical bull. And last week, Chavez accused the US of causing the earthquake in Haiti, which may have killed 200,000 people. Too soon, Hugo, and too bullshit. Apparently, he initially claimed that they'd used the earthquake as a pretext to occupy Haiti. So that's claim one, and let's break that claim down for a second. One, why would they do that? Why would they want to occupy Haiti? It is one of the poorest nations on earth. I really don't think there is any ulterior motive to the aid and troops being provided there, unless the US knows something about Haiti's natural resources that the rest of the world, including Haiti, doesn't. So that's already crazy, but where to go from there? Well, to another dimension of lunaticking, that's where. Chavez went on to claim that the US had personally caused the earthquake as part of testing a tectonic weapon that can cause eco-type disasters. He claimed that the earthquake weapons would eventually be used on Iran and that they will be able to set off earthquakes and volcanoes. Chavez said the US should now stop playing God. That's not playing God, Hugo. That's playing Doctor Doom. He's not living in the real world. He's living in an X-Men movie.
I think what this shows, John, is that at sensitive times, when people are suffering, someone always needs to be talking to Hugo Chavez, because otherwise he will instinctively fill the gap in conversation with some proper bullshit.
What this is really, though, Andy, is a massive f*** you to Pat Robertson. Chavez is essentially saying, you think you're crazy, Pat? Please, let the big boys show you how it's done. You're out of your depth, sucker. You think you can be distasteful about this disaster? By the time I walk away from this microphone, I'm going to make you look like you work for Médecins Sans Frontières. Now sit down and let the big boys do this.
This is just the latest entry in the offensive things people have said about Haiti since the earthquake. Pat Robertson, as you mentioned, we discussed a couple of weeks ago. Rush Limbaugh's also dipped his unholy wick into it recently, saying that the disaster has enabled Obama to boost his credibility with the black community. To which the White House Press Secretary, Robert Gibbs, responded, I think in times of great crisis, there are always people that say really stupid things. Well, I guess with regard to Limbaugh and Chavez and Robertson. He could have just left off, I think, in times of great crisis from that sentence. He could have added, in fact, there are always people who always say really stupid things, and I think those three men really fit into that category. Limbo actually had some form on Haiti. In May of last year, when Bill Clinton was appointed UN Special Envoy to Haiti, he said this about that benighted, struggling island. "I'm just going to tell you, if I was named envoy to Haiti, I'd quit government. You can't even pick up a prostitute down there without genuine fear of AIDS."
Oh.
Well, there you go. Well done, Western civilization, for creating that. 3,000 years well spent. Now, as we record at, 10 a.m. London time, because of John being on his archipelago, Tony Blair has just started giving evidence to the Iraq inquiry and or doing story time for his little friends, Delete, according to your level of cynicism. So we can't yet tell you what he said, or whether his evidence has proved that, it was all fine after all, come on chaps, all's well that ends well, and looking at Blair's current hourly rate, it has ended unbelievably well for him. But I guess what it will probably show, as the great Roman soldier and gladiator Maximus Decimus Meridius said, what we do in this life echoes in eternity, which, translated from the Latin, means roughly, put your cock in a pond and your trousers will get wet. You know, I don't think we're going to find out anything from Blair that we didn't know before. And I think the point is that this inquiry basically hasn't revealed anything new. And I don't think we'll know the full impact of Iraq for many years, decades even. And we see this, across the world, quite how long the repercussions can take to become clear. So Haiti, for example, arguably has never recovered economically from the severance package dumped on it by its ex-colonial masters, France, in 1825. Now, France charged Haiti the equivalent of £21 billion for the privilege of not being recolonised, available at punitive interest rates from, you've guessed it, French banks. And Haiti eventually paid this debt off in 1947, 124 years later. And even 75 years after the debt started, they were paying 80% of their national budget on debt repayments to France.
Holy shit.
Now, that is a messy breakup, John. Also, you look at Greece, still hasn't really properly picked up after the Athens-Sparta civil war, the 5th century BC. So I'm not sure that Blair is going to say anything that is really going to enlighten us. I think his general line of attack is going to be Saddam was very, very naughty, and Iraq is a more funky kind of place without him than it was with him. But we'll report back fully next week. All we can tell you from this week is that one of the Foreign Office's top legal advisers, Elizabeth Wilmshurst, described the way the legal arguments were presented and assessed in the build-up to Iraq as lamentable, which is not really what you want from your government. Bugle feature section, and to mark John's debut appearance in Hawaii, it's a feature on Hawaii. How much impact are you going to make during your 12 hours there?
Hard to say, Andy. I mean, we've already been asked to leave. it's not what I thought Hawaii was going to be. It's the opposite of relaxing.
Right, I see.
The unique friendliness of the Hawaiian Islanders has been replaced with the open hostility of the Republican Party base. I don't know if I'd recommend this particular package trip to paradise, Andy.
Right. So your pineapple and volcano cocktail isn't assuaging that.
Pineapple's excellent, actually. Right. I had pineapple at breakfast, which not even the sour looks I was being given over breakfast. I'm staying in the same hotel as the place, which, hindsight, not a good idea. Right. That is shitting on your own doorstep.
Well, now, of course, we know from Bugle 59 that Hawaii was named after the noise that Captain Cook made on the beach when, in becoming the first European to land there, he trod on a scorpion. But what exactly is Hawaii? This is this week's multiple-choice quiz question. Is Hawaii A, the response given by a quizmaster on a TV game show after a contestant surprisingly and idiotically chose the obviously wrong fifth option in a multiple-choice question? Hawaii. What is it? B, what Tiger Woods muttered under his breath after being overhauled after leading into the final round at a major championship for the first time in his career by, ironically, someone from Korea, a golfer called Y.E. Yang. Tiger was caught by a greenside mic saying, Y.E. Grr. Was it C, referring to the Shriek of Delights that famous early 20th century Welsh painter Gwen John, one of French sculpture whiz Auguste Rodin's several artistic bits on the side, the Shriek of Delight she used to give as a child when crossing the River Wye, which marks part of the border between England and Wales. What's that noise? Her little brother Augustus would ask, looking up from his drawing for a second. Don't worry, kid, said his daddy. It was your sister. It was her Y.E.
Oh, do you know what, Andy? I thought the Tiger Woods one was going to be the worst one, and I'm wrong. I stand corrected.
Or was it simply Oasis's Noel Gallagher trying to sing the word away? I'm done. Was that too much?
It wasn't too much, Andy, but it was plenty.
But have the people of Hawaii got over the annexation of their country by America in 1893 yet?
Again, Andy, it's hard to say because I've been from the airport to here where I was immediately getting shouted at. So I've not really touched on those kind of issues of independence with the Hawaiian people.
Of course, we Brits discovered Hawaii, Captain Cook, as I said, the cheeky little explorer. But he ended up being killed by the Hawaiians in a dispute over some stolen boats. Happens to the best of us, eh? But, of course, Captain Cook had the last laugh because he paved the way for the stream of European visitors to the once idyllic islands who brought with them such European treats as smallpox, influenza and measles, thus devastating the indigenous population. So, note to any Hawaiians thinking of bumping another Englishman off, don't kill the Brits because our vengeance will be slow, deadly and probably spotty.
That's what we do.
That's right. And a quick Hawaii fact box. Barack Obama was born in Hawaii, or was he? Yes, he was.
You joke about that, Andy, but that mirrors an exact conversation I had with the ex-RNC chairman from Texas this afternoon.
Right.
I would have laughed harder, Andy, if I hadn't been looking into a qualified lawyer from Texas's eyes as she said, well, we don't know he was born here.
Right.
And I said, well, yes, we do know that. And she went, well, I'd just like to deal in fact. It was like talking to you. But she wasn't joking.
Well, maybe she's got a point, John, because bearing in mind that America in 1993 officially apologised for overthrowing the legitimate Hawaiian monarchy back in 1893, doesn't that mean that Obama was in fact born in Islamabad or somewhere like that?
Yeah, that's certainly her argument.
Next fact about Hawaii, it's of course the most recent addition of all the 50 states in America, but it's also the longest. At a princely 1,522 miles. That's how long Hawaii is. That's the same length as 500,000 adult crocodiles queuing up for a go on a fairground ride or an ice cream. And if those crocs were queuing up for that ice cream at my house in London, the queue would stretch as far as Moscow. Seems a bit pointless being that long, but when you're an archipelago, you might as well stretch out and use the facilities. Another Hawaii fact, Hitler never went to Hawaii, but if he had, he might have lightened up a bit or been eaten by a shark. Although shark attacks are pretty rare in Hawaii, as I'm sure you found out, John.
I haven't had one so far, yep. So that stat checks out.
Yep. Although sharks can spot a dickwad like Hitler at a range of 3 miles, so he might have been more vulnerable. And a Pacific Ocean fact, the Pacific Ocean is so big that if a game of water polo was played in it, there would have to be 170 billion players on each side. And I've done the maths for that.
Oh, boy.
That was half an hour well spent. Also, Hawaii is an archipelago. No one knows why archipelagos exist. One theory is that the Almighty Lord God himself, as he was making the world, whenever his mobile phone rang, he would flick the dirty clay off his hands to stop his phone getting dirty. Archipelagos are made of those flicks of clay, apart from the Aleutian Islands, which were a sneeze. And finally, the heaviest sumo wrestler in history was born in Hawaii. Salivaa Atisanoi, fighting under the name of Kanishki, or the dump truck, smashed the scales at a wobbly 45 stone, which means that if he wanted to eat his own weight in chocolate, he'd have to eat 45 stone of chocolate. And if he wanted to eat his own weight in cricket balls, he'd have to eat 1,836 cricket balls. That is true as well. Which equates to eating every single delivery bowled in the 1948 Oval Test match between England and Australia.
And I know that's true.
OK, well, John's got to go and do some late-night filming in Hawaii, so I'm going to do the emails on my own. That's going to be a new experience, John.
Yeah, so I'm just going to have to say a preemptive goodbye now.
Right.
Well, it's not preemptive, it's an actual goodbye.
Right, okay.
It's just it's too early.
Yeah.
I'll have to say goodbye to the Bugle, so I'll go and... It's just, why not upset another person or two before bed? Why not do that? And then sleep fitfully for 4 hours before getting up and doing it all over again.
Do Republicans have a peak time of day for taking maximum offence?
That is interesting. By my experiments today, Andy, it was literally 2 o'clock just after lunch.
But is that because they're most sensitive then, or you're most irritating?
I don't know. I don't know. That's not for me to say. That you'd need someone committing a proper controlled experiment for that.
Well, have a wonderful night, John.
I won't.
I know you're going to end up seeing the dawning, dancing on Waikiki Beach with a group of Republicans.
If that's the case, Andy, I'm going to be begging a shark to open its mouth and diving down its gullet. I'll speak to you next week, and I'll bring the Hawaiian salt back.
Bye.
Bye.
It's just me now, with me, your emails. I've had some fantastic emails, as always. This email comes in from Peggy, of No Defined Abode, who writes on the subject School Newspaper versus The Bugle. Dear Andy and John, I made the mistake of writing an article on The Bugle for the fine arts section of my school paper during journalism class. I've always thought The Bugle should be on all school curriculums around the world. Anyway, Peggy continues, I described The Bugle in glowing terms, even using humorous excerpts. My teacher took this as an opportunity to play the episode that contained the American talking about killing seals. My teacher is a member of PETA, that's People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. She gave me a look that combined horror with something that said, you will not pass this class. My grade fell from a 98 to an 83. The Bugle can do that to you. We will ruin your academic career. Nevertheless, she continues, enthusiasm over The Bugle took hold over a few of my friends, and we created a zine that mocks history and praised The Bugle in it. The Bugle wins! We have truly overcome the educational system. This email came in from Richard in Tokyo. Anything from Tokyo is going to have something interesting in. And he writes, Dear Andy, John and Tom, congratulations on reaching the 100 Bugles, although I must say that you had a somewhat nervous 90s in taking three attempts to get from 99 to 100. At one point I was worried you were going to Kevin Peterson it down long on throat. That will be lost on the majority of our listeners in an attempt to do it all with one shot. After Andy's musing that the Schweppes-Cadbury merger had failed to produce fizzy chocolate, I was surprised to find this admirable attempt just out this week from Japan's Suntory in my local convenience store. And Richard has sent us a picture of a sparkling chocolate-flavoured drink. I think once again this has proved that there is nothing in this world that we cannot achieve if we work together and have a dream. And finally, this one comes in from David Mutton, who writes, John and Andy, as President Obama marks his first year in office, it seems only appropriate to remind you that it is still possible to contribute to Rudy Giuliani's 2008 election campaign. Now John has his green card, there is no longer any excuse. So there we go. Keep the dream alive. So do keep your emails coming in to thebugle@timesonline.co.uk. Sport now, and tennis, tennis, tennis. It's a great time for British tennis. Andy Murray, the Briton, is into his second Grand Slam final at the Australian Open. Britain as a nation has done pretty much jack case shit since 1936, apart from wait for one of its male citizens to win a Grand Slam tennis tournament. Well, that wait could be over by the time you listen to this on Sunday morning. Murray, the young Briton from the English suburb of Scotland, lighten up, Tom, it was ages ago, takes on Roger Federer, the world's greatest living genius, in the final, with nothing at stake other than the reputation and self-esteem of a once great nation, Britain. The last time a Brit won a major Grand Slam tournament, we still had an empire, and Winston Churchill was still viewed as a bit of a loser. Come on, British tennis! Let's hope Murray doesn't get all Scottish on us again like he did in the US Open final of 2008. Don't shake your head like that, Tom. He's not in the studio this week, so he has no way of replying to this. Ah, balls. So that's it for this week from the now empty hotel room in Honolulu. That was John Oliver. And from me here in London, I've been Andy Zaltzman. Keep well, buglers.
For the best in sport, comedy, science and books, go to timesonline.co.uk/podcasts.